And welcome to Studio 2. I'm Kevin McCrory, in for Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman, Errant. Kevin, nice to have you. You are here with us. Who is executive producing the show?
Yeah, that's me too.
You do both at the same time?
Yeah,
that's incredible. Wow. The amazing Kevin McCrory. And so today, you know, you've been hearing this in the headlines, of course. It started up in the New York, New Jersey area. It's now filtered down to our region, talking, of course, about sightings of comedian Pete Davidson. I mean drones. Pete Davidson has been popping up in Philly all week.
I missed that one, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's all over. He was at the Eagles game, the Sixers game. He's riding around in a van today. Maybe he'll stop by Studio 2 if we're lucky. Mm-hmm. Pete, welcome to the Philly area. But we are actually talking about drones, a more serious topic, although perhaps it's much ado about nothing, Kevin. We do have a question for our audience today. What do you make of all the drone sightings that have been happening in our area recently? And what bigger questions about safety and privacy does this raise? Because we want to have, in addition to a conversation about what's happened over the last month, a broader conversation about the past and the future of drone technology and what the rules of the road should be.
Yeah, this has been one of those conversations that have been happening around dinner tables in backyards, you know, with friends and family on the group chain for the past few weeks. And we thought this was the time. Let's bring in a couple of experts to sort through what we know, what we don't know, kind of zero in on the facts.
Yeah.
And have a conversation that hopefully can advance the narrative. So we've got two great experts in today. So we're really excited to get to that. And we want you to get involved in this show. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499, or email us studio2@whyy.org.
Again, that number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org with your drone thoughts. And I would love to, by the way, hear from some drone hobbyists, because a lot of people, this is a huge passion. And I'm curious what you make of what's happening now, but also where you think drones are headed in the future. But first, Kevin, we always start with a trio of local news stories, and you're going to start us off with a very serious story that we wanted to at least give a mention to today.
Yeah, it's a national story that now has a grim local tie. The suspect in the Gilgo Beach killings was charged this morning in the murder of a Philadelphia woman who went missing in the year 2000. So Rex Ewerman was charged with killing Valerie Mack. Her remains were found on Long Island back in 2000, but she wasn't identified until a DNA test in the year 2020.
Yes.
So 20 years went by where this family really didn't have answers, and they've started to get some answers, and today is the first step, it seems, towards possibly some justice there. So Mack was 24 at the time of her death, had been working as an escort in Philadelphia. Now, this is the seventh murder that Ewerman is charged with. He's 61 years old. He was arrested in 2023 as part of an FBI cold case investigation. He's a Long Island resident and father of two who was a licensed architect with a business in Manhattan. So this was kind of a shocking development that came out that year.
This was a national story.
National story, yeah. And now there's this local tie. Ewerman did appear in court today, said he was not guilty. He will be held without bail. And through the Suffolk County District Attorney, Mack's parents said they are grateful for, quote, small bit of closure.
Yeah. And obviously, we'll keep our comments brief on this story. But, you know, you mentioned, right, there were so many years passed between this murder and just identifying the remains and now charging someone with the crime. And the sort of small glimmer of hope in all this is that the advancements in DNA technology have made things like this possible.
Yeah.
The idea that you can crack a cold case like this and just charging Ewerman at all was very much dependent on DNA technology. So all of that has made these cases that seem unsolvable solvable. And we hope that, for many other people out there waiting for answers, they get some bit of closure, like it seems like the Mack family could have in this case. Let's move now to story number two about the American National Bird. Do you know what the American National Bird is, Kevin?
Now, if you would have asked me a few hours ago, Avi,
I
would have said 100% it's the turkey.
And you would have been
wrong.
Wrong. Not the turkey. Never been the
That's
turkey.
That's a myth, apparently.
That is a myth. So it was not the turkey. It's also a myth, by the way, that Ben Franklin wanted the national bird to be the turkey. He was making a sort of sarcastic remark in a letter in which he was denigrating the choice of the eagle as the national bird, but he was not actually advocating for the turkey to
and,
be the...
And if I were to ask you hours ago what the national bird was, you would have said...
The bald eagle, of course.
But it's not.
And I would have been wrong, Kevin. It's not the bald eagle. There is no national bird. It was a trick question, listener. Mm-hmm. So there's no national bird in our country. The bald eagle has, you know, been a symbol of the country, unofficially our national bird. But there is now finally a law that has just passed the House and is going to the president's desk that will designate the bald eagle as our national bird. Of course, obligatory. Go birds. And it's a big win for Philadelphia in many ways. I think this augurs well for our Super Bowl chances. Would you agree, Kevin?
It augurs
significantly. I don't know how much one can augur or not augur, but if you can augur a lot, this is auguring a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And what is the state bird, Avi? Do you know? I just told you this.
Yeah. Wait. I can remember. It's like the tufted grouse.
It's the ruffed grouse.
The ruffed grouse. Kevin, by the way,
now, wait a
one
second.
Of your many
wait
talents, one of your many, he knows all of the state things. He knows all of them. We were quizzing him. Kevin knows all of the state things.
And you go around here posing to be the trivia king. And I've just stumped you on Studio 2.
All right. Well,
with a question that I gave you the answer
right,
to an
right,
hour ago.
All right, trivia usurper. Do you know what the national mammal is?
Bison?
Dang, okay, that's right. Do you know what the national tree is?
No.
It's the oak.
The oak. I know the Pennsylvania tree is the hemlock. Do you know what the Pennsylvania state amphibian is?
It's a Geico gecko.
It's the eastern hellbender, the largest salamander.
I love the
in
hellbender.
States.
That's my favorite, too. The national flower, do you know it?
No, I know the state flower. Mountain laurel.
Mountain laurel. See, he knows the state everything. It's bizarre. Why do you know all this?
Catholic school education, man.
Yeah, baby. Shout out to Saint who?
It was Christ the King Parish.
So, I'm sorry,
in
Christ,
East Philly.
Shout out to Christ the King. I should not have assumed it was a saint. The national flower, by the way, is the rose.
Mm.
Did not know that. Don't know why it is, but I like that. I love roses. It has a thorn. And the purpose of you saying that is to bring up the band Poison. No. Okay, so let's go to the third story now. Let's get this train back on the track, Kevin. The third story today relates to our bigger story today.
Drones. And what's interesting is, here's the tie-in. There is a guy in New Jersey who used a drone in 2023 to dump food dye into residential and commercial pools. There it is. The rose has its thorn. There's the drone, and then the thorn is using it for mischievous purposes.
Brilliant, so, seamless connection. Go
Anthony
ahead.
Spina, 31, was indicted yesterday by an Atlantic County grand jury on third-degree conspiracy to commit criminal mischief
Let's
charges.
Just hammer again what the guy was doing, allegedly.
Right. He was using a drone to fly over swimming pools and then drop a dye pack into the pool so that the color of the water would be different. It would turn green. Now, why would he do that?
We don't know.
Yeah. But I will say, if I was 17 years old and I maybe 16 years old and I had
access
to a drone.
This guy's 31, by the way. No excuse, but go ahead.
And there was a little light mischief brewing in me. I could see myself doing this to a friend.
This is the modern TPing a house.
Yeah.
Right? You fly a drone over someone's pool and you turn it a crazy color.
Yeah.
I am curious why this particular guy was doing this with drones, because it might be far more nefarious than just like a little teenage prank. But it apparently caused quite a bit of damage. People were understandably concerned that their pools were changing colors. So now we have a charge and some explanation. Apparently drones were to blame. And drones, by the way, Kevin, are the topic today, as we've teased many times. We're going to talk about the recent rash of drone sightings. What is driving that? Could there be some nefarious explanation behind all of it? Or is this really just kind of like a social contagion thing going on? But I think even more than that, what I'm really interested to talk about today, Kevin, is the past and future of drone technology. Mm-hmm. Because drones came onto my radar, no pun intended, like about 10 years ago, and all of a sudden you would see them up in the sky and people would be flying them around and you were like, wait, where did this come from? Why are they here? Now they might be delivering packages and helping us with our real estate listings. I mean, the uses are very broad. So we want to know more about drones today. 888-477-9499. Give us your drone thoughts. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. We are going out of this segment with Please, Please, Please by Quakertown's own Sabrina Carpenter. And we are doing that because her album was named one of the 10 best of 2024 by The Atlantic. They also named another Philly band in their top 10, Kevin. This is the Philly punk band Mannequin Pussy.
You said it, not me.
I said it, not you. And so we just want to shout out both of those local acts who have apparently released two of the 10 best albums of the year, Kevin.
According to The Atlantic.
According to The Atlantic.
All right, so we're going
to
get into that drone conversation soon. Give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email studio2@whyy.org. That's next on Studio 2. And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Kevin McCrory, in for Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Have you been looking up in the sky a lot lately? A lot of people have. They've been seeing unexplained objects above. It's causing concern, maybe even a panic. Reports of unusual drone sightings have continued now for weeks. And while government officials have said there's no reason to worry, they also haven't offered a ton of explanations.
So what's going on here? Is this just a bunch of hobbyists playing around, or is there something more nefarious going on? And what should the federal government be doing and saying about it? Joining us this hour is Rob D'Amico, a retired FBI special agent and former counter-drone unit chief. Welcome, Rob.
Rob, you're with us there? Don't think we have Rob, let's go to our second guest here.
Miriam McNabb is the editor-in-chief at Drone Life. Miriam, are you there?
Don't have Rob or Miriam. So let's just set up the conversation for our guests, and we'll read in some comments.
I'm with you.
Oh, there you are, Miriam. Great. Fantastic. Rob, do we have you as well? No Rob yet. Okay. So I still do want to set up this conversation, though, for our listeners, and just hang tight for a second, Miriam. So we want to know what you make of all the drone sightings, right, Kevin? But also, what bigger questions about safety and privacy does this raise? So give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email us, studio2@whyy.org. And let me read in this comment now from Nick, who says, I can't help but think this was all something very mundane that spiraled out of control. Once you let out the idea that there's some kind of UFO, people will see what they want to see. And like we're witnessing, every helicopter and low-flying plane is now, quote, a drone.
Right.
So Miriam McNabb, is that the way, when you look at all the facts of this case, if it really is one unified case, is that the explanation you come to? How do you look at this scenario?
Absolutely. I could not agree more with the gentleman who just commented. So I've been looking at this. We've gotten a lot of calls. The FBI, the DHS today, another joint statement from the FAA, DOD, DHS, FBI, all saying, listen, there are no foreign drone swarms in the sky here. There are a lot of explanations for what's going on, but it is primarily a case of misidentification. It can be very difficult to determine what's a manned aircraft and what's an uncrewed aircraft. In the dark at night, you're just seeing lights. There's also something, a well-known phenomenon in the aviation industry known as the parallax effect, where if you stare at, you know, cell tower lights or something like that for long enough, you can think that they're hovering. And now there are lots and lots of small drones taking to the sky at night to see if they can find the foreign spy drones.
That's
right?
The snowball effect.
Who wouldn't
part
do that?
Yeah.
So it seems, Miriam, like you're saying one of the bigger conversation points in this really is more of like a social contagion thing, where once people get talking about something like this, it can snowball into, I guess, like that old metaphor of like, if you're a hammer, everything you see is a nail. And like, that's
absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what drones can actually do. You know, even with extremely expensive, sophisticated thermal imaging tools, you know, at night, I don't know what exactly foreign spy drones would want to see over the golf course. That doesn't make any sense to me, you know. So
if most of them are misidentifications, that doesn't mean all of them are misidentifications, right, Miriam? And so let's go through some of the potential more nefarious explanations that have been put
out there. Test, test, test.
For instance, hey, there's Rob D'Amico coming through on our headphones. Rob, are you with us here on WHYY?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. Welcome, Rob. So I was just asking your counterpart, Miriam McNabb, and I'll let her field this question about some of these theories that have been proffered so far. So there was a congressman from New Jersey, Jeff Van Drew, who said that maybe these drones are attached to an Iranian mothership. Why wouldn't that be true, Miriam McNabb? Why wouldn't that be a good explanation?
I think you have to give our federal agencies a little more credit. So in my experience, you know, these federal agencies are using extremely sophisticated equipment. They are very highly trained personnel. They are extremely aware of what's going on in the airspace. And believe me, they would know, right? So yes, of course, there's the Chinese spy balloon that we found. It is true that there are foreign adversaries perhaps launching some sort of vehicle or something like that. But this is just not the case here. They are using sophisticated counter-drone technology. They have said that they have deployed that technology in order to search for any potential problems. This is just not what's happening here.
The other
you can't hide from the FBI for that long.
Yeah. The other theory that's been out there, and Rob, maybe you can speak to this, is that this is really just the U.S. military or U.S. military contractors doing something, and it's being seen and talked about, and the government can't give an answer because there's something classified about it. Can you speak to that, Rob?
If the military did this and all of a sudden it started causing this, they would stop. Like there's no reason to do it here. A lot of the testing goes where people aren't. The problem is the government hasn't given much explanation that causes these conspiracy theories to then gain water, just like them having a, quote, classified brief today instead of an unclassified brief. And it was the members of Congress who requested classified and not unclassified, not the agencies. And that's just going to feed this even further because in the counter-drone systems I ran for the FBI weren't classified. They're sold to police officers, they're sold to the public. There's nothing classified in there. DOD obviously has some other things, but those are used overseas. So, and like Miriam said, like we know where all Iranian, drone ships are. We track them a different way. And if they're off the coast, there'd be other things being done.
Hmm. Well, let me ask you, Rob, what level of disclosure is appropriate in this situation? Because I get the sense, and it's just a hunch, that maybe law enforcement is not being as clear as we want them to be because they don't want to say there's nothing. And then they later find that there is something or a kernel of something out there. What level of disclosure is appropriate? What level of disclosure is not appropriate here?
So with this, you have to weigh in, what you'd be giving away. I think what happened was the U.S. government got caught behind the curve of PR with this. They didn't think it was going to blow up. But if they don't have any systems there running to say it's definitively not this or it is this, you can't go out and say that. So and the FBI does not. FBI only has a few counter-drone systems. They are there to do specific events like the World Series, the Super Bowl, and to make sure that someone doesn't weaponize a drone and bring it in to cause safety issues. They don't mass look at the sky. That's FAA to control airspace, but they still don't have systems just in rural areas. They have them around airports. Now, military bases have their own counter-drone stuff that they're getting up. Not all of them have them yet. Like when all this is happening in rural New Jersey where there's no systems at, you can't say it's not something definitively. Because right. Again, like you said, if it comes out, you'd look dumb and you don't want to say that. I think now that they're moving systems there, they started explaining and I believe a lot of it is misidentification and then actually people adding to the chaos. I forget which one of you said it about the teenager in New Jersey. I was a teenager. I grew up in New Jersey. If I had a drone, I would be flying it over everywhere, like the mayor's house, the sheriff's house. And then the pool thing was, I kind of laughed at that, but I also thought now with this whole thing about nuclear stuff, I don't think I want to come on the air and say what I would have done to, to you know, spread that thing out.
Let's take a little bit of a step back here. I think this is a moment where whatever you think of this conversation that's been happening, it's caused us all to think a little bit more about what's up there. And we realize there's a lot up there.
It's
also raised questions of, well, wow, what if a bad actor wanted to do something? Could you walk us through, like, what are the defense systems in place that this country has so that if a foreign actor or a domestic bad actor wanted to do something really bad with a drone, how would we stop it? And do you think that there's a system in place to stop it?
Well, there are systems in place, but they're not large. So now only three federal agencies have the authority to, quote, mitigate a drone. And mitigate a drone means interrupt its flight path, try to take it over, or jam it to bring it down. Now, jamming is frowned upon because you can't control it as much. DOJ, Department of Justice, is one of the agencies. So under the FBI, we could mitigate a drone if we thought it was a threat. Now, you do that, there's a couple different ways. Trying to take it over, and that is the communications between a drone operator and the drone are considered privileged communications. It talks in data packets. Congress has put that as the same thing as intercepting a phone call between two people. So when I would go to the Super Bowl with my unit, in order to mitigate authority, to have mitigation authority, the FBI had to write a 50-page document to the attorney general's, which would be reviewed and then signed by the attorney general. For that specific event, I could mitigate a drone. I have about 12 to 13 seconds to identify a drone, see that it's a threat, and try to mitigate it. And now you're in electronic battle between the drone controller and your systems. At times, we've only done it a few times, but we pushed it back, and then the controller gained control again because his power to the drone increased over ours because we were further distance the opposite way. I think they've figured some of that stuff out, though. But there's also gaps in that system. Now, state and locals do not have the authority to mitigate drones at all. Like I said, there's only three federal agencies to do that. Overseas, with DOD, they have like drone jamming guns. They have all kinds of other authorities because it's not on U.S. soil. But here in the U.S., those are the mitigation, you know, those three agencies. DHS under FBI, DEA can do it for counter-drug stuff. Bureau of Prisons is big on it because people are flying contraband into prisons, phones, drugs, and everything else. So BOP, Bureau of Prisons, is actually big in the counter-drone arena.
Wow.
And we did a huge test with all the different counter-drone units in Indiana a few years ago.
I would not have guessed that. So, by the way, if you want to join this conversation about drones this hour on Studio 2, give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. What do you make of all these drone sightings? What bigger questions about safety and privacy does all of this raise? Let's bring in a caller now. This is Phoebe on line one from Upper Bucks County. Phoebe, you're on Studio 2. What is your question or comment?
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that, you know, most of the people have been seeing these things at night. I was at home in hanging out in my living room the other night, and I heard what sounded like my neighbor using a backhoe. It was dusk, and I thought, you know, interesting time for him to be. It sounded like it was right outside across the road next to my mailbox. So I opened the door, went out on the porch, went out on my walkway, and looked up, and there was this thing in the sky. I don't know. It was definitely above the trees. I have a really high pine tree right next to my house. It was above the pine tree, but it was so loud, and it wasn't black. It was, the sky was a pale blue, and it was a little bit paler than the sky. It had a red light underneath. I would say it was maybe oval or octagonal or something. Mm-hmm. You know, octagonal. Yeah.
And then it sort of hovered away, Phoebe.
It was following my road. It was going really slowly. If I had had my wits about me, I would have run in grabbed my phone and took a video. And I really wish that I had. I mean, I didn't see any like feet underneath like a helicopter. I didn't see any arms or propellers.
Right.
But where the noise was coming from, I don't know.
Okay, so thank you so much,
Phoebe.
Really
looked like a UFO.
Yeah,
so
that sounds
so
like a disquieting experience at the very least. So, I mean, Miriam, you heard that description from Phoebe. I mean, did that trigger any thoughts for you? Did it sound like something familiar? I mean, and I'm sure you're hearing these types of stories all the time. Like, what do you make of them? What do you tell people?
Sure. I think that that is absolutely probably a very accurate description of a recreational or professional drone, but what we would call a small UAS. And small UAS has a very specific definition. It's a drone of weighing under 55 pounds, yeah. Right? So they are loud. They do make a buzzing noise if you're flying at low altitude, and legally, certainly recreational drones do need to fly below 400 feet in altitude. You know, following the road, that does sound like somebody nearby was operating a small drone. And I think that it's important for people to, because I'm a proponent of the commercial drone industry. You know, drones are used for a lot of great things. They deliver medical supplies very quickly. They help first responders. They help with combating wildfires. There are tons of good uses for drones. I think people need to sort of get a little bit more accustomed to that when you see a drone in the air, it's not necessarily something terrible. It's probably not looking at you particularly.
But I guess part of the problem is people can't know that, right?
Right.
Miriam, so they just see it. They don't know what it's doing. I mean, what kind of safeguards are in place to make sure that that thing is not menacing me, is not spying on me? Like what are the regulations in place so that when I do see something in the sky, I can rest assured that it's doing something, you know, productive and not doing something nefarious.
Absolutely. So the FAA, you know, the FAA views all drones or uncrewed systems as aircraft, and they take it very seriously, the project of integrating unmanned systems with manned aircraft into the airspace is a huge and complex project. But as such, whether you're a 12-year-old that, you know, received a drone for your birthday or a professional photographer, if you're flying a drone and that drone weighs more than 250 grams, which, you know, the FAA, when they first came out with that, described it as like two sticks of butter. So this is a very, very lightweight aircraft, right? If your drone weighs more than 250 grams, you are required to register that with the FAA. And if you're using it professionally, you have to register it no matter what it weighs. If you're a recreational flyer, you are actually required to take something they call the trust test, which is a very brief online test designed to let people know about the basic airspace regulations. You are required to fly below 400 feet in altitude so that you are staying well away from any manned aircraft, you know, any airplanes, helicopters, anything like that. And you're obliged to stay out of restricted airspace. So it's really important to note with this thing that I think not every recreational flyer has been made aware that the FAA did issue temporary flight restrictions over the Armory in New Jersey, over Bedfield Golf Course, and so forth. So if you are flying your recreational drone over there, that is illegal. You are breaking the law. And now, drones are required to meet remote ID requirements. So when you have situations like we recently had where I am in Boston, two recreational pilots decided to cause problems at Logan Airport. They were out on a boat out in the Harbor Islands thinking that they were, you know, hidden from everybody while they flew these drones. But it was not very difficult for law enforcement to track them from the drone signal, found them, and arrested them promptly. So if you are flying your drone illegally, you do risk facing the consequences.
Miriam, you're a booster of drones, clearly. And like you said, hey, people just kind of have to get used to it. I honestly don't know if I'm ready to live in a world where I just have to get used to it.
Yeah.
And I'm curious your take, Rob. Like, is this just something that you think that normal citizens should have to be like, oh, yeah, there's something weird flying in my backyard. So I guess that's just the way the world is now.
So I think two things. They are going to have to get used to it because they're out there. I think FAA needs to do more. But, you know, I think the courts are going to have to start looking at doing some things. So we talked about and I've had some celebrities come to me wondering what they can do. And if you're flying a drone from a public street, you can fly that over other people's property because people don't own the airspace above the property. You don't own any of it. The federal government controls airspace for commerce. Towns can't make it illegal to do certain things because they don't own the airspace. What people get confused is if you're flying a drone from a public property under 400 feet and you can see it, it can fly over you and it's not doing anything legal. Now, if it starts looking in your windows, there's other laws about peeping Tom and other harassment laws that you can go after him for. But people think, oh, it's flying over my property, I'll shoot it. And as Miriam said, that's like shooting a manned aircraft. There is no difference in that. You're going to get in a lot of trouble when you do that because it's probably going to be videotape because most of the drones have cameras on it. So people think they own the airspace, and I think that's going to have to go to the courts because you buy property, you build a house that goes up 30, 40 feet, you plant trees that go up to 100. So I think there's an expectation of privacy, but the courts have not caught up to technology.
Really,
I think, you know, in the future, we'll look at seeing maybe 100 feet and down. If a drone incurs on that without permission, it's going to be like trespassing it is normally when people walk on your property. But the courts aren't there yet, and people don't know that. And the more and more drones we get in, if you look at the big commercial stuff, like Amazon and UPS want to start delivering package with drones. I think they've even tested them out. I think they're going to have to lend money and infrastructure in order to be able to do that safely, to promote education about it, because they're going to get money from that. It's going to be beneficial to them. So they really have to go back with FAA because the remote ID is a very small piece of it. We wanted more information. The FBI, when I was with them, we wanted more information in the remote ID. Right now, all it comes down is, if you have it on your phone, it communicates by Bluetooth, so it can talk to a phone instead of a counter drone system. We wanted one for a law enforcement app so that law enforcement officer gets more information. He gets the name, the phone number, so he can contact the controller. And then the public, if they get remote ID and they see it, they just find out a registration, then they have to go through FAA. But that's the way they have it now. They don't even have law enforcement the ability to get information on the drone operator. They just have a registration. You have to call FAA.
Right.
Try calling FAA and get through.
I haven't, but I don't plan to. So we're going to – you sort of teed us up perfectly, actually, Rob, because in our next segment, we want to talk about commercial and military applications of drones and where this is headed, because we haven't really talked about sort of the history of this technology yet and why it has exploded recently. Let me read in one more email before break, though. Sam says, if someone is flying a drone to do some sort of surveillance, they're not going to want to attract attention with large, bright lights. They will use infrared illuminators and other technology that doesn't say, hi, I'm a drone, look at me. So Sam kind of agreeing with both of our experts that these sightings probably are not evidence of foreign adversaries or spies. So we're coming up on a break here on Studio 2. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Great transition music, by the way. And coming up in the next segment, like I said, Kevin, we're going to talk about why this technology has exploded now and where it is headed. Stick with us on Studio 2. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Kevin McCrory in for Cherry Gregg. We are talking about the recent drone sightings in our area. And our question for you this segment is, do you think drones are a net positive or negative? Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499, or email us, studio2@whyy.org.
And allow me to reintroduce our guests. We have Rob D'Amico, a retired FBI special agent and former counter-drone unit chief, as well as Miriam McNabb, editor-in-chief at DroneLife.com.
So I want to put this to Miriam. We kind of teased in the last segment that you're quite the drone booster, and I said I was a little bit of a skeptic, and I want to give you a chance to maybe convince me that I should accept our new drone overlords.
I absolutely am pro-drone, and I think that people need to think about the positive ways that drones are being used, and there are a lot of them to talk about. So when we talk about drone delivery, and there are active drone delivery trials going on in Texas, California, different parts of the country, people usually think about like getting deliveries of fast food and things like that. And that's true. And a lot of people will probably receive some sort of retail drone delivery. But when I talk to people and I say, okay, so maybe you don't need your burrito that much faster, maybe that's not critical. But if your four-year-old gets stung by a bee and you need an EpiPen, you don't want that ambulance to have to wait in traffic. You want that EpiPen delivered to you as soon as possible, as the crow flies, in seconds. Mm. They're doing drone delivery of things like AED equipment to accident sites. So in the case of somebody having a heart attack or something that requires an AED, time is really of the essence. A minute can make a huge difference in the outcome. And so in that case, if you're getting that equipment delivered by drone to the site so that somebody can administer that life-saving technology as soon as possible, huge difference in outcomes. We have a major problem with wildfires now in this country. Drone technology used for wildfire detection and mitigation is a game changer. It is saving lives. It is mitigating the damage. And the technology is absolutely incredible.
Can I ask you a question, Miriam? Because that delivering things quickly and efficiently does seem like one of the major applications. But my question becomes, how many of these could we feasibly have in the air simultaneously, and it would still be safe? Can you give me a sense of that?
Oh, I think that you're talking far, far, far more could be there and safe and working just fine, and probably before you would even notice them, because many of the delivery mechanisms are actually extremely sophisticated. They're not the buzzing drones that's right near. A lot of them hover far overhead and drop things gently with amazing tether technology and so forth. So I think that we are a long, long way away from saying, okay, we have too crowded a low altitude airspace. What the FAA is very, very careful about, and there is incredible technology and testing going into this with NASA and with industry partners, is integrating drones into traffic management systems so that you can see, you know, that where our manned aircraft are landing and taking off, where emergency helicopters are going from a hospital roof to somewhere else, where private airplanes are traversing. We also have this layer of commercial uncrewed systems which can operate safely. And there's a lot of technology and a lot of thought going into this.
I'm not sure if you convinced me, but I'm certainly happy to learn more and more about
okay,
this.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Yeah. Let me ask you a question. If you had a little kid who was lost in the woods, mm-hmm. do you have any kids?
I have four.
You love any kids?
Yes,
any kids?
Yes.
Okay, so one of them's lost in the woods. Okay. Do you want one drone looking for them or 100 drones looking for them? And do you want them all to have to stop when it gets dark, or do you want them to be able to continue 24/7? Do you want one guy on the ground doing a grid pattern of where your little kid is lost, or do you want a drone going overhead able to identify it and say, okay, police, go get them. They're right there.
Well, you hit me in the heart, Miriam.
Yeah, well, that's a perfect place to transition to Rob D'Amico, because is that something that law enforcement should be empowered to do? And where do you think guardrails need to be, Rob? Because you talked about getting these calls from celebrities, but hey, even non-celebrities don't exactly like the idea of someone flying a drone over their house. So do you agree with Miriam that that application, you know, should be in play, you know, finding missing persons? And where do you think the guardrails should be, Rob?
Well, you're never going to go against finding missing kids. I mean, that's one of the things. That's a great example. And, you know, but I think there needs to be airspace situational awareness. So they're starting, the company I used to work for, Dedrone, has enough systems out there that they're actually can cover big cities. And you could subscribe if you have a house or a business, and you can subscribe to that area to see what drones are flying over. Because drones are being used for business intelligence to see how many trucks go in and out of certain warehouses to tell how much they're being sold. There's cyber actors dropping Wi-Fi pucks onto roofs and then mimicking like a network, trying to get people to get on the network [S2] Wow. [S1] Of a company so that they can go in cyberwise. There's a lot. Anytime you have anything, you're going to have good and you're going to have bad people [S2] Yeah. [S1] Do both sides of it.
Yeah.
So cyber, airspace awareness is really big. I think all this is coming.
Airspace awareness. I'm trying to get my head around that term. Like, give me a sense of what that means.
As Miriam said, you have manned flights at certain areas, and then you have lower levels, which is going to come into the drone space if you're using it commercially. And then you have to have – now, drones are going to be self-aware, just like, you know, a Tesla car to a point. Like, that's where it's got to get to that – if the drones have to be able to deconflict on their own. Mm. But when she did talk about some of the delivery systems, they fly over at a safe altitude, and then directly over the house, they can lower something down or they can drop straight down. So they're looking at ways to do this, and the companies are vested in doing it that way. The ones that you don't have control over, the, you know, teenager flying the drone
hobbyist,
and not going out and looking at it. So there's going to have to be some things built into these systems. But it is going to happen. And if you look at cars and how we got to that with cars, I'm sure some of these, you know, crazy conversations with horse and cars was going on too, that in order to step forward, you have to be able to start pushing it to a point. And then again, everything that we have, you're going to have people using it for good and people using it for bad.
Let me flip it to you, Miriam, on this point. Okay, when I'm out in the Wissahickon Valley Park, I want to be looking at the birds. I want to be experiencing nature. I don't want drones flying around me. When I'm out looking at the stars at night through a telescope, I don't want drones flying around me. So is there regulations that need to exist to allow for that?
Take your iPhone when you go on your next hike, by the way, Kevin.
Miriam, are there regulations? Are there regulations that would protect that? I mean, there's a lot of people who like the sanctity of nature.
Yes, absolutely. And there are regulations in place. I think that, you know, what Rob pointed out very specifically, that law enforcement needs to be more empowered to use counter drone technology to be aware of people that are in the airspace flying what the FAA has referred to as the careless, the clueless, or the criminal, right? So there are laws in national parks, for example, that say that you can't fly drones there. Absolutely. And for good reason, right? It's not only, and if you live near a bird sanctuary or something, right? You don't want the drones coming and interfering with the nesting species or whatever it is. And so those laws do exist. I think that what's happened is that it is very important to make sure that everybody knows about those laws so that recreational pilots know that they're not supposed to be there. And also that local law enforcement, SLTT, they call it state, local, tribal, and territorial law enforcement, are empowered to deal with it because they're the people who are going to get the call.
We are starting to run short on time, but we have not even mentioned the military application of this technology. And I think we have a caller who's going to bring that part of the conversation into our broader conversation. This is Matthew from Philadelphia on line one, who has some deep concerns about drones, I believe. Matthew, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. My comment is just I'm not a Luddite, you know, or per se, or you know, anti-drone or anything like that. I don't think it can really be reduced to positive or negative in terms of any technology sort of being introduced into society. I think that we know that the kind of most immediate use and the kind of probably the most common use still to this day of drones is militarily with these wars under Obama and Trump executed for reasons that, you know, are foreign to most Americans. Many thousands of people died. So I was thinking about the point that one of your panelists made that, well, you know, it would save the life of a child, you know, if they need an EpiPen or something like that. It's like,
but it can also be an instrument of war. And your point is well taken, Matthew. And Rob, do you have any response to that? Like, because many Americans, when they've read about drones, they're in that broader use abroad. And you mentioned earlier in the show that there's a much wider berth when it comes to overseas use of drones. How is the military using these drones, and how should they be able to use these drones?
Well, I mean, weapon systems are weapon systems, and they're used for war. A couple of examples. One, I interviewed a hostage that was held by the Taliban in Pakistan, and he actually told me that the Pakistani people that he had been held up with appreciated the precision of American weapons because they weren't killing dozens of people in their missile strikes. When they went after a terrorist target, it went through the window, it killed him, and not the entire block, which the Pakistani army would do. There's drones out there now that you can fly into a building. They use the camera as facial recognition, and then they blow up, killing their intended target and only their intended target. And that's going on in probably in Israel now. When you look at Ukraine is the test bed for offensive and defensive drones. What's going on in the future is being tested there now. It is happening, and it's going to happen. So the U.S. The military's R&D budget for drones, for counter drones, was $121 million when I left the Bureau, and I think that was 2021. Just R&D, because this is the wave of the future. So we better be prepared for it. Doesn't mean that's what you do at home, obviously. Military should not be using drones for surveillance here. That's against the law. But you have to understand this is where warfare is going, and we better be in the front leading edge of it.
Bradford emails us, ownership of airspace is irrelevant. The state police power is very well established to protect public health and welfare and peaceful enjoyment of one's property. Lighting and noise ordinance have been enforced for years. We're backtracking a little bit now, but Miriam, any response to that? The idea that you can't be harassed just because of like noise and nuisance laws, regardless of whether you own the airspace above you. Or maybe,
absolutely. Absolutely. I think that is absolutely the correct perspective, is that, frankly, there have been laws against keeping Tom, against stalking, against harassment, against noise and nuisance, and so forth. And regardless of the tool that you use to break those laws, you're breaking a law. So if somebody is flying a drone in a way that is harassing you, your children, your animals, whatever, or preventing you from enjoying your home, that is breaking the law.
And
absolutely.
Only because we're short on time.
And that's exactly what we tell celebrities. You have to go at them or what they're doing with it, but you kind of have to have a system to let you know who's flying it. Now, you can take video and stuff, but some of these systems out there at least can identify a person, and then they show it flies over my house at 3 p.m. every day for an hour and then goes away. So there's technology that you have to assist with that, but they are breaking other laws. It's not the flying of the drones. It's what they're using the drone for, harassment, peeping Tom, or something else.
Right. Before we go, and it's weird to ask this at the end of the conversation, but Miriam, I would like some general explanation of why this technology seemed to take off in the last 10, 20 years to the point that we all became aware of it in the public. Because the idea of a radio remotely controlled aircraft, I was reading, goes back into like the 19th century. So in maybe a minute or so, can you explain what happened recently that made this proliferate the way it did?
Sure. I think that we are seeing sort of a coming together of different technologies which have really expanded the use of drones. So you have drones now, but you also have AI, and you also have software, and you have PCs. So when you think about the industrial uses of drones, for example, you can spiral up a cell tower, take thousands of images, develop a digital twin, use AI-powered analysis to tell you exactly where you have rust on that cell tower, where you need maintenance, etc. That's sort of a newer application because you have all of these technologies coming together to amplify the use of remote control.
A convergence of many things all sort of at the same time. That's interesting. Well, we do have to leave the conversation there. There's so much more we could talk about with drones, and perhaps we will another time. Let me thank both of you, Rob D'Amico, who is a retired FBI special agent and chief of the counter drone unit. Rob, thanks so much for sticking with us through the technical challenges. Maybe drones will be our solution in the future to that. Thanks, Rob.
Welcome.
And Miriam McNabb, editor-in-chief at dronelife.com. So appreciate your time and perspective, Miriam.
Thanks for having me.
I want to shout out Conrad, who wrote in, we need better education, maybe better regulations and ways to identify the drones. Well, in terms of education, I think this hour of the show might have helped in that regard. So thank you, Conrad, for listening.
Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Al Banks and Tina Calliquet engineered today's show. Our executive producer, you'll never guess, is Kevin McCory.
From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Kevin McCory in for Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk to you tomorrow.